2 Kings chapter 6. We'll read the first few verses here to gather our thoughts. He says, "And the sons of the prophets said unto Elisha, Behold, now the place where we dwell with thee is too strait for us. Let us go, we pray thee, unto Jordan, and take thence every man a beam, and let us make a place there where we may dwell. And he answered, Go ye. And one said, Be content, I pray thee, and go with thy servants. And he answered, I will go. So he went with them, and when they came to Jordan, they cut down wood. But as one was felling a beam, the axe head fell into the water, and he cried and said, Alas, master, for it was borrowed. And the man of God said, Where fell it? And he showed him the place, and he cut down a stick and cast it in thither, and the iron did swim. Therefore, said he, Take it up to thee. And he put out his hand and took it." That will conclude our thoughts this morning. We want to try to look at that, and the iron did swim. What a wonderful thing that must have been to be there and to witness the axe head floating back up. That's contrary to nature. As contrary to the law of gravity. An axe head, something that is made out of a hardened steel, is not supposed to float in water unless it's something like a ship and it's got a large cavity, but just a solid piece of steel will sink to the bottom. And this did sink to the bottom, but it came back up. And there was a means by which that it came back up. What I want to try to speak on this morning is the providence of God. The providence of God. The providence of God is real in this life. Amen. I wonder if we really, and I'm speaking of myself this morning as much as anybody, I wonder if we really realize how much the providence of God works in our daily lives. In our daily lives. God is here with us now. I'm thankful that when he created the earth and created man, that he didn't just leave the world to its own devices. If he would have this, we would have destroyed ourselves a long, long time ago. But God is with us now. God has been with his people all throughout the ages to providentially care for them. When we're talking about providence, providence means to exercise care for. It says to exercise care for somebody. It means to provide. It means to protect, to exercise care, to provide, to protect. And we see that God providentially cares, provides, and protects for his people in this life. Now, a problem with a lot of people, some people's thinking about providence is providence cannot be confused with predestination. Amen. And that oftentimes is a big error. There are a lot of people that are fatalists that claim to be absoluters, and a lot of those people, I'm convinced that a lot of those people just have a poor understanding of what providence is. And cannot rightly divide the difference between predestination and providence. You know, people, if somebody says, "Well, I know the Lord caused that to happen," so the Lord predestinated that. But God can cause something to happen without predestinating it. That's called the providence of God. God can providentially step in any time that God pleases and providentially care for and provide for his people at any time. Predestination. What is predestination? It's plain and simple what predestination is. And we'll keep it in its context. Over in Romans 8 and 29 and 30. "For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed unto the image of his Son." Verses 29. What is predestination? Predestination is being conformed to the image of his Son. Who is predestination applied to? Predestination is applied to a people for whom he did foreknow. He also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his son. So see, when you see that right there, that describes predestination. Its own text describes that it is concerning a people. Now, he didn't say for what he foreknew, for the events that he foreknew. He said for whom he did foreknow. He did predestinate. So we see that predestination is talking about a people that he foreknew, and that foreknowledge is not talking about intellectual knowledge, because God knows all things. That foreknowledge is that knowledge there is talking about a great love that he has for a people. That knowledge is talking about love. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his son. So we see here that predestination is that in a nutshell is that it is a people being conformed unto the image of his son. Now, when will these people be conformed to the image of his son? Well, it won't be in this life, and that's preached in other places that if we live a certain way in this life, that we can conform ourselves into the image of Christ by our... No, I want to tell you, so long as we're living in this life, we're sinners. We are born again by the Spirit of God, and thanks be to God, but I want to tell you, we're far the best state you will ever get in. Man is altogether vanity. His best state, he's altogether vanity. And no matter how good you try to be in this life, no matter what stature of goodness you try to attain to, you will not be conformed unto the image of his son. Not in this life. I'll tell you when that's going to be. Go read verse 30. Read the next verse. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, whom he did predestinate, them he also called. And whom he called, them he also justified. And whom he also justified, them he also glorified. There's being conformed unto the image of his son. When is that? Is when we die and go home to be with the Lord. It's when we exit this place that we'll be conformed unto the image of his son. Who? The people. A people that he has foreknown. A people that he has chosen. That has nothing to do with the events and activities and the things that go on in this life. That is predestination. And you have to separate those two. That doesn't mean that God is not working in this life. God is. And that's called his providence. His providential care. His protecting. His providing for his people. God certainly does that. And we may not see it all the time. In fact, I suggest most of the time, I doubt that we do see it. I doubt that we stop long enough to recognize the providence of God. And certainly, we can look back in our lives, can we not? And we can see more clearly the providence of God. I can see the providence of God in bringing me and my wife to where we're at geographically, where we're living at right now, and bringing me to the church here. And well, before that, bringing me down to the church down in Toccoa, Georgia, and the events. I mean, I could spend all day telling you the events of how things took place. And at the time it was just all unfolding. It was all unfolding, and it was well against my will, by the way. But God was unfolding these events, and now I can look back and I can see the providence of God. That God providentially made those things to happen. You know, it's like an ant on the ground. You know, you ever guide? You know, you can guide an ant without touching it. All you gotta do is put your hand in front of it on the ground, and you know what that ant will do? It'll turn. And then you can just do like that. Put your hand on it in front of it again, and it'll turn again. You can turn an ant and cause it to go just about where you want to, just by blocking. Putting blockades up before that ant. You know, and God can do that to us in this life. He can do that, and that's the providence of God. Over in the fourth chapter of Mark, in Mark chapter 4, In Mark chapter 4 and verse 36, we see there was a multitude here, and the Lord was giving them a parable, which they would not understand. A parable wasn't given for them to understand. A parable was given to try to hide the truth. But anyhow, in the 35th verse, he says, "In the same day, when the evening was come, he said unto them," his disciples, this is the Lord talking to his disciples at the end of the day, he says, "Let us pass over unto the other side." And when they had sent away the multitude, they took him even as he was in the ship, and there were also with him other little ships. So we see the Lord and his disciples in a ship. And the direction is they're going to go to the other side. They're not the only ones out there on the ocean, on this sea. There are many other little ships. That's what he's telling us. There were other little ships out there with them on this water, scattered about. And he goes, "And there arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat unto the ship, so that it was now full." Now, notice, understand that this ship was not the only ship out there that was receiving these boisterous waves. It's not the only ship that was in the storm. Every other little ship that was out there was also in the middle of this storm. Not just the disciples where Christ was at. He says, "And he was in the hinder part," talking about the Lord, "of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And they awake him, and say unto him, Master, carest thou not that we perish?" You know, they were afraid that they were going to perish there. And of course, he arose and rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" So the lesson that I want to get to you here is that he calmed. There's a lot of lessons in this, but the lesson I want to give you is that he calmed the wind and the waves. He calmed it right there. And the disciples witnessed that in the boat. They saw that. What manner of man is this that even the winds and the waves obeyed his voice? So they saw that. But what about everybody? What about all those other ships out there? What about all those other boats out there that were praying to their false gods? That were saying, you know, "You have to do this or you have to do that to make the waters calm." And then all of a sudden the waters are made calm. They all received the blessing of the Lord. But there was only one ship that knew what happened. All the other ones may have had their theories. They may have had their ideas of what happened. But there was only one ship that knew of a certainty what happened. And that's because Christ was on that ship. I suggest this morning that there are a lot of things that happen in our lives because of those that are around us. And other circumstances where we receive the providential blessings of God and we are completely unawares of it. We're completely unaware of the blessings of God in our life. Many times, I believe. And so we go back over here. And he goes on to say, now listen, this is why he's in so much distress in the fifth verse. But as one was felling a beam, the axe head fell into the water, and he cried and said, "Alas, master, for it was borrowed." It was borrowed. Man, it's bad to break or to lose something that's yours. But have you ever borrowed something from somebody, and they had enough trust to let you have it, and you went and you broke it, or you lost it, or something? I want to tell you what, that's 10 times as worse than it just being yours. Because somebody has entrusted you to use their tools here, and you've completely slipped off the handle. Now it's out there in the river. It's gone. It's gone. And he says, "Alas, this was borrowed." You know, it shows me, first of all, that this man didn't have any money. If you think about it, because if he'd had money, he wouldn't have had to borrow it. He could have went and bought an axe head. But he borrowed this axe head. And there's an inference in this axe head and that he borrowed. And that is that everything in our lives are borrowed from the Lord. Everything. When we breathe, we're breathing the air that God has given us to breathe. It is borrowed. Our lives are borrowed. We're called to be stewards of this life. We have nothing of our own. We are bought with a price. What? Know ye not that ye are not your own? The apostle said in the 6th chapter of Corinthians, you're not your own, for you are bought with a price. Therefore glorify your Father with this body. Why? Because it is His body. Anything that we have, dear child of God, is just borrowed from the Lord. It's because of the providential care of God that God blesses us in this life. Yeah, He blesses us providentially. And it's all borrowed. You know, you're a steward of this world. When you leave, you're leaving these things behind. You're not going to take a thing with you. Nothing. You're going to leave this world with exactly what you came into this world, and that is nothing. Nothing. Everything is borrowed. God gives us these things providentially. Now I want to look at those things that are providentially. I want to look at two kinds of providence, Lord willing. I want to look at what's called ordinary providence, and extraordinary, or extraordinary, however you want to pronounce that, extraordinary providence. There's a difference in ordinary providence and extraordinary providence. I want you to see when this axe head floated, when it did swim, and that's just talking about it came to the surface, that was not just ordinary providence, that was extraordinary providence. And I want you to know this morning, dear child of God, that not only does God work in our lives by an ordinary providence, but He also works in an extraordinary providence in our lives to bring things about. And we may not even be aware of them. We may not even be aware of them. You remember when Esther was to go, you know, remember when Haman, in the book of Esther, and Haman was supposed to be there to, Haman was there. He wanted to destroy the Jews because Mordecai wouldn't bow down to him. So he just wanted to, well, it's a long story. I can give you a chance to, you can add that on to Brother Bruce's homework and go read the book of Esther. It won't take you long and to save me a little while explaining all this. But anyhow, the decree went out that all the Jews would be destroyed. And so here we have Esther, who's married to the king, and she's a Jew. She's kin to Mordecai. And she's been asked to go in to the king to plead for the children of Israel, to plead for the Jews, that the king would reverse this. And the thing about going in before a king is if you went in without him asking you to come in, he had the right to take your head off. He had the right to kill you. He could kill you on the spot. If you came into the king and you were not summoned to the king, he had the right to kill you right then. Or if he held out his scepter towards you when you came in, it was all right. He wasn't going to kill you. He was going to allow you to talk. And so Esther was concerned about this. That's something to be concerned about, is it not? I mean, when you're going in before the king. And listen to what she says. Or listen what Mordecai, when they're talking here, in the 14th verse of the 4th chapter of Esther. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time. This is Mordecai telling Esther, if you hold your peace at this time, you know, talking about the Jews are going to be destroyed. Then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Who knows? Who knows, Esther, but what you're not brought to the kingdom for such a time as this? Could that be the providence of God? Absolutely. Absolutely. Don't take these things as just a mere coincidence. And certainly don't take them as predestination. What this is, it's the providence of God. That God sent her at that time for that reason. When we look at the providence of God and we're looking at not the extraordinary but the ordinary providence of God, the very fact that we're able to breathe, as I said, is the providence of God. Our heart beating, God provides that. He provided that. Our lungs expanding and taking in air, God provides that. God's provided that. That's all part of the providence of God. You say, well, that's just science. That's just how we are. It's just that way. No, don't take God out of it. Don't take God out of the equation. Now, I'm not saying that God is sitting there right now and He's making your heart beat every time it beats. He set things in motion. But I'm going to tell you, there's a means to it. Like that stick that He cast in, there's a means. And yes, he set things in motion and your heart beats, your lungs expand and take in air, your blood veins send out fresh blood and bring in blood back into the heart that needs to be reoxygenated. And all of that is by the providence of God. God has done all of those things. It's all by His providence. So see, even there, even just in that alone, we can see the providence of God. He said in the 5th chapter of Matthew, in about the 45th verse, He said He makes it to rain on the just and the unjust. He makes it to rain on the just and the unjust. You know what that is? It's the providence of God. It's the providence of God. It's God providing in this life. The ordinary providence of God. There are a lot of things that you can see in your life where God has directed your course, and that's called the ordinary providence of God. That God is providentially there with you. And isn't that a comforting thing? It is to me when you look back and you can see where the Lord has brought you hitherto. You can see the blessings that, and you can see where God has directed your lives to bring you to where you're at today. That gives me great assurance. It gives me great comfort to know that my provider is watching out for me on a daily basis because I need Him on a daily basis. And I can assure you one thing, dear child of God, if Satan hadn't gotten into you and destroyed your life like he did Job, it's all because the Lord has put up a hedge over you. And I want to tell you what, that hedge is a hedge of protection. And we're talking about the providence of God. God providentially cares for us. He watches out for us on a daily basis. And I want to tell you, it's a shame, dear child of God, when we go day in and day out and we fail to recognize the greatness of God in our lives. We fail to recognize His providential care, His providential hand, His providential love, and how He guides and directs us. Now, you know, the Lord's not going to providentially be there with you when you're buying a new car and you want to decide whether you want to get a brown one or a white one. Okay? That's not the providence of God. I don't think God's really concerned about what color car you get. But God is there for you daily in your daily needs. And a lot of our needs we don't even know we have. But God providentially takes care of us. You didn't get here today where you're at today, dear child of God. Wherever you're at, you're here in this part of your life, in this circumstances, by the providence of God. It's all by the providence of God. That's not predestination. God didn't predestinate all events. And I'm not saying that every event in this life is the providence of God. Not everything that happens in this life. We'll go back to Romans 8 and 28. For we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are called according to His purpose. All things, as we have mentioned many times, I'm talking about painting with a broad brush. All things do not mean, that doesn't mean that all things are working out together for your good. You have to understand what all things, what the word all is. When the train conductor says, all aboard, is he talking about everybody? The whole world? No, he qualifies. It's qualified by those that have a ticket. So all things don't always mean all things. That's enough of that, but I want you to just understand that not everything that happens in your life is by the providence of God. But God does care for us. We can see where God guides us. He's not gonna send evil our way. He's not gonna send lust and worldly things. He's not sending those things our way. Those things are just here. They're here because of a product of who we are in Adam. And those are things that we need to deal with. And those are things, in order to deal with it, we depend upon the providence of God. God looks out for us. I'm trying to get a verse over in the 10th chapter of 1 Corinthians. There hath no temptation taken thee, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that which you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape that you might be able to bear it. You see, he makes a way of escape. What is that? That's the providence of God. He doesn't bring you into those, but I want to tell you what, dear child of God, if we're looking to him, he can bring us out of those. And that's what we need the Lord for in this life. We bring ourselves, we get ourselves in a mess. We do real good at that on ourselves, on our own. We don't need any help in that. What we need help in is getting out of those circumstances, getting out of those situations. And it's the providence of God that brings us out each and every time. And I thank God for that. You know, they talk about, talking about the providence of God and this solar system and global warming. You know, we're too much hairspray and all this, that, and everything else is causing the collapse of the ozone. The ozone and it's going to overheat and everything and we're just destroying this world. But let's go to see what God says about that. The Lord says in the 8th chapter, and this is the providence of God, in the 8th chapter of Genesis, in the last verse, he says, "While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease." Shall not cease. Now, we're not near as powerful as we like to think that we are. We're not that powerful. We're not more powerful than God. I'm not suggesting, I'm not going to get on a scientific platform this morning. I'm not suggesting that there isn't some warming. But I want to tell you what, you go to the glacier polar caps right now, and you're not going to hear this. You won't hear this, but the ice has grown in the North Pole 40%. There's been a 40% growth in ice at the North. You don't hear anything about that. It's all about global warming. But anyhow, enough of that. But what I'm talking about, and why I bring that up, is we don't have to worry about it because it's all in the hands of a providential God that knows all things and that has all power. He created this earth and he's going to destroy this earth. And when that time comes, it will be destroyed. But until then, seasons are going to continue. Heat and cold are going to continue. Day and night are going to continue. We're going to continue revolving around the sun every, 365 and a quarter days. That we revolve around the sun. We revolve on the axis every 24 hours. Those things will continue until the Lord comes back because of the providence of God. Because he set those things in order and they're going to continue. And that's the providence of God. So we see that the ordinary providence of God, that he's with us now, that he's with us in all situations. In Psalms 37, he says, "The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholdeth him with his hand. I have been young, and now am old, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread." You know why? Because of the providence of God. Because of the providence of God. God providentially takes care of him. So let us look now. We've been looking at the ordinary providence of God. Let's look just for a little bit here before we close at the extraordinary providence of God. Or the extraordinary providence of God. The extraordinary providence of God is God moving and working against the laws of nature. And by the way, those laws of nature are the laws that he established. And he can supersede those laws anytime he sees fit. Anytime he wants to providentially provide for one of his people, he can supersede the laws of nature. That's what happened when the axe did swim. He superseded the law of nature. That is the providence of God. Has God ever done that in your life? Have you ever seen? I'm not talking about a natural or a literal superseding the nature. That's an example. But I'm talking about bringing things together that you couldn't understand how it came together. It just logically didn't make any sense. I think I've said this before. I can remember when me and my wife years ago, new to coming into the church and everything, and we only did this one or two times because it was scary to look at it, but we had more bills than what we were bringing in. And we both said, how are we paying off these bills? And I'll tell you how we were paying off those bills. We didn't try to seek it out and ask. We were just thankful to God that it was happening. It was by the providence of God. I believe it was the extraordinary providence of God. That God, in some way, in His miraculous way, was allowing us to be able to pay our bills. When on paper, we didn't have the money to pay it. And I don't know how that was happening, how that was going on, and I couldn't understand it. But I want to tell you what, we were very thankful for it, and we recognized the providence of God in that. That God was there for us at that time. And he was making those things happen. The extraordinary, the iron did swim. That's the extraordinary providence of God. When the Red Sea was parted, that's the extraordinary providence of God. You can go to the 15th chapter of Exodus and about the 8th verse, and it talks about that the waters stood and were congealed. That means it's just like jello. They were congealed. The walls were congealed. That is the extraordinary providence of God. When the Lord stopped the sun for a space of time, that is the extraordinary providence of God. He went against the laws that He had created in nature. When we talk about over in the 6th chapter of John, when we see a man, a young lad, that brings just a few fishes and a few loaves, and the Lord blesses and breaks that, and yet he's able to feed over 5,000 men, not including women and children. That is the extraordinary providence of God. That God can provide in our lives with what seems like we just have a little, He can make that little a whole lot. In our life. That's the extraordinary providence of God. God works that in our lives. Have you ever seen a no way out? That there was just no way out, and you were at a dead end street. Your nose was against a brick wall, and there was nowhere else to go. But then all of a sudden, there was a way made for you to come through it. Just like the children of Israel when they went through the Red Sea. Just like when he's feeding 5,000, that is the extraordinary providence of God. We can go over to 1 Kings in about the 17th verse, and we can see the widow woman of Zarephath. You remember when Elijah was sent to her, and she was out gathering sticks. You remember? And he says, "What are you doing gathering sticks?" I'm paraphrasing. She goes, "Well, I got just a little cruise oil, some flour. I'm going to go and I'm going to make a cake of bread for me and my son, and we're going to die. We're going to die." You know what he said? He said, "The Lord has showed me that if you're obedient to Him, if you're obedient to what I say, that if you'll make one for me, that cruise oil and that fire will never diminish. It'll never be taken away." And so she did that by faith. She made, and every day, can you imagine just going back into that cabinet every day? And opening it up, and there's that cruse of oil. And there's that flour, just enough to make another loaf of bread. Just enough. Give us this day our daily bread. Just enough for me to make it through now in this life. Just today. And then tomorrow morning, open up the cupboards. Guess what? Another cruse of oil and enough flour to make another cake of bread. Praise be to God. The extraordinary providence of God working in our lives, caring for us, watching over us. He said over in Psalms 31 and 15, "My times are in thy hands. Deliver me from the hand of my enemies and from them that persecute me." My times are in thy hands. Our time is in the Lord's hands. The providential care of God's hands. He is there for us now. He is there for us to direct and to guide us in this life. He said over in Psalms 50, is it 59:1, "His hands are not shortened, and that he cannot save, and his ears, and that he cannot hear." I believe that's Isaiah 59. Yeah, behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened, that it cannot save, neither is ear heavy, that it cannot hear. He's there for us now. And you know what we have to remind us of the ordinary and the extraordinary providence of God? We've got Ebenezers. We've got Ebenezers in our lives. In other words, we can go back in our lives and we can see where the Lord has brought us hitherto. And if we can see where God has brought us from, and we may not know what the road looks before us, but surely if we can see where God has brought us from, our faith will be in God to carry us the rest of the way through by His guiding hand. That's what happened when they had the rock of Ebenezer. That rock of Ebenezer means a stone of help. He is our stone, isn't He? He is the rock. Jesus Christ is. He's that stone of help. You remember they were going into a battle, and there's a lot that could be said, but I'm gonna cut to the chase. The Philistines came up against them the second time. The first time their minds and hearts weren't right. They weren't trusting in the Lord. They were trusting in the Ark of the Covenant. And then they learned a valuable lesson the second time here, and that was to trust in the Lord, that He will save us, not that it will save us, that He, the Lord, will save us. And so they had their minds and their hearts directed in the right place. And sure enough, the Lord came through and providentially delivered them from the Philistines. And it says, and then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shin. You know what Mizpah means? Mizpah means a watchtower. And Shin means a cliff or a crag. Mizpah and Shin, a watchtower, a crypt and a crag. They had the Ebenezer between that. You know what's between two high places? A valley. You know it's down when we're down in the valley and it looks like that everything is just not working out like we thought it would. And we just don't know how we're going to make it through. Do you know it's at that time you need to remember your stone of help, your rock of help. It's at that time you need to look back in your Ebenezers and remember where hitherto, isn't that what they said? Then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shin and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, hitherto hath the Lord helped us. Hitherto hath the Lord helped us. It's when we're in those valleys of our life, dear child of God, that we need to look back at the Lord and we need to see His ordinary providence in our life. We need to see His extraordinary providence in our lives and then know that God is there with us in our circumstances, whether we're high up on the mountain or whether we're down in the valley, that God is there with us and that He will providentially care for us. All we need to do is trust in Him and walk with Him in this life. You remember when he went to go cut those trees, he asked the prophet to come with him. We need to make sure we have the Lord with us in our walk in this life. And that when something happens and we become in a strait, that we can turn to the Lord. And He can providentially bring us out of the situation of the trial that we're in. Our Ebenezers. How important it is that we recall those things. His time are in our hands. Therefore said He, take it up to thee. Put out His hand. And He put out His hand and took it. It was delivered back to Him, that thing that was borrowed. That accident that was borrowed. That was lost. That stick. You remember the prophet Elijah, He cut that stick and He threw it in the water. You say, well, what does that mean? Well, I don't know. I can't tell you what that means when He threw the stick in the water. I can't tell you the analogy of that stick being thrown in the water. I can say, though, that God can use a means in His providence towards us in this life. God can use a means. God can use us, can use one another. He can use circumstances. He can use a stick to raise up an axe head. God bless you. I appreciate the time.